As all of you may know, this COVID-19 period has gotten a lot of people down, especially the musicians, because they lose their chance to perform live in front of audiences. So this month, I'm bringing some musicians back on my podcast to share about their story and maybe sing us a song or two. So, please enjoy.
It's time out with Daryl's.
Hey fellow podcast listeners, this is Daryl dropping in, and I want to thank you all for being so supportive of my podcast. We hit 100 views just in 4 months, and many more to come. In this episode, we have Vivian Wong, who will be sharing. About her story. Hey guys, today we have Vivian with me on my show.
Hi, hello everybody.
So Vivian, can you introduce more about yourself?
Yeah, so hi Daryl, thank you for having me today. My name is Vivian Wong, Huang Hui Wen, and I am a Singapore-based singer, host, and voiceover artist. I actually started music after my corporate career, so I did the very Singaporean thing. I graduated with a degree in communications, and then I actually went out to work in the public service. So I was working in a government agency for a good number of years. Like, I won't say how many. Okay, actually, I don't mind. I was there for like 7 years. And then after that, I was deciding on my next move. And I was already interested in music. And I wanted to just branch out and try new things. So I quit my job to basically start freelancing. So of course, it was a very big leap into the unknown. But that was 4 years ago. Yeah, so that was even before this song came. Into the Unknown wasn't even a thing yet. At the time, it was Let It Go, Let It Go. Okay, so I let go of my corporate career. And I went into doing more gigs, more events. I branched out into more emceeing work and started doing voiceover as well. So it's been 4 years. And I'm still enjoying and still learning. And thankfully, I'm making enough to pay my bills, so my parents don't complain about that. That's a little bit of background about me. That's
you were also a breast cancer survivor, right?
Yes, I am. So about a year after I started freelancing, I was getting good momentum. Things were going great. And then I discovered that I had stage 2 breast cancer, which was really, I was 32 when I was diagnosed in 2017, and it just really, threw off a lot of the plans that I had, and of course, a lot of things that I wanted to do didn't really seem to matter because, more importantly, I was like, oh my God, will I be like dead in a year, So thank God I did my treatment. I am all clear, and I've been all clear for 2 years and a bit. So wow. I am quite happy about that. And of course, it's given, it's given me reasons to value what I do now. And, I want to make sure that what I do is purposeful and what I do can bring joy to people and to serve people as well. So I think going through cancer gave me that perspective of how can I pay forward? How can I put more meaning into what I do, because you know, eventually all of us will grow old, and will all these big achievements that we've done in our lives, what will they matter if we didn't love people, if we didn't serve others, or, you know, if you believe in God, if you didn't serve God with your gift? So, you know, that's, I would say that having this experience was really valuable and precious, you know, in shaping who I am as a singer and as a person as well.
So let's come to today's topic. That's why you're on the show here. How has Circuit Breaker been like for you?
Gosh. I think if you ask any musician in the scene, I guess nobody's ever thought that this kind of scenario could ever happen. I mean, there's been bad years before, there's been recession years, but I think it's, you know, really never, we've never had a time like this. I think in my case, I have a lot of things to be thankful for. I know it's been really tough for some musicians who have their own, like, families, and they have a mortgage to pay, they have children to feed, and music is really their mainstay. I think I was very fortunate that, you know, I do stay with my parents, and aside from music work, I do other kinds of work that can be done off-site. So I did have some buffer for myself, and that's really been a relief. Otherwise, I think I would have felt it a lot harder. But I guess, you know, the main thing that I love is still to perform. You know, I like the energy of singing live and performing for people. And of course, it's been challenging to not have that for 3 or 4 months. But I think it maybe didn't hit me as hard as other people, because I have experienced this kind of inactivity before. Like, you know, when I was ill, when I was doing my chemo, I couldn't go out and perform anyway. I was stuck at home. So in some ways, I was like, you know, during Circuit Breaker, I'm like, okay, this is not unfamiliar. You know, I've been through this before, and I know that I'm quite confident that I'll be okay.
But what makes you want to do a live? What makes you want to do a live show with Caleb and
with others, right?
Yes.
I guess it's just, you want to find any way to be able to perform again, and, you know, it's just so nice that right now we do have, you know, Facebook Live and all these things to help us. And yeah, you know, there's no substitute.
But there's a side effect to that. There's a side,
which
side,
is. What's the side effect?
The tech, because you can't just go live with a phone. Like, people do live with a phone, is definitely not the best audio quality and video quality.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's true. I think the tech barrier was difficult for me to think about when I started. So initially, when Circuit Breaker began, I felt a bit helpless, because, you know, I was like, oh, I'm not very good at tech. You know, I never really paid a lot of attention to, like, recording at home. I took a lot of this for granted when I could be out there and I could go to a studio, or I could, you know, go to a friend's place and we could go and record. So suddenly I was like, I'm on my own now. And, you know, it was frustrating because a lot of people seem to be cracking it and figuring out how to, you know, make a whole live work and look good.
Like Mrs. Slow and Daniel Cha. And Daniel Cha.
Sorry?
Like Mrs. Slow and Daniel.
Miss Lu. Exactly. I think Miss Lu and Daniel have done a fantastic job. You know, they were really one of the first to get out the gate, you know, put out a good system, have fantastic content and guests. So that was, like, super inspiring.
That's how I became how to sing here at live stream. It's all because of Mrs. Lu.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's been wonderful that there have been some people in the community who have been very open about sharing what they know to help other musicians to be able to live stream. I mean, I can understand if some musicians want to sort of keep a good thing for themselves, but, you know, I think it's really nice that in a difficult time that all musicians and singers are just pitching in to share what they know, because I think the more... I really do believe that a rising tide will lift all of the boats. So, you know, if we have more visibility together as live streamers, you know, it at least draws the attention of, like, you know, corporates or, like, you know, even community Facebook pages, and they go, you know, there's more live streamers. It seems to be people who want to hear live streamers. So maybe we should have live streamers on our page, you know, pay them, engage them like it's a normal gig, and have them entertain our Facebook audiences. So the better visibility that we all have, I think that really hopefully points to more opportunities for everyone. So it's been really nice to see everyone sharing what they know from the technical side. And that's really also how I came to sort of figure out my own setup, you know, for when we were in Circuit Breaker. But of course, once Circuit Breaker lifted and we're actually able to, you know, move around and go out to record music with people, of course, that's been so much easier. And, you know, it's really helped, I think, a lot more live streamers take off, you know, once they don't have to be just alone at home. I just see so many more people trying out streaming now. And I think that's great. You know, it's good to see that this scene is sort of flourishing a little bit. We're just making the best of a bad situation. And I think people are really, you know, stepping up and being willing to learn and just move quickly, you know. And so I think that's really encouraging to see. Yeah.
And also, like, Geylang Serai CC and, like, Tampines, Safra Mount Faber, they give people, you guys, the opportunity to perform even though you're all at lockdown at home, and bring many viewers that, like me, that didn't know music or feel so in love with music and better understanding of it, because the Daryl that I was before was not like this. And the songs that I know before is not so
Not so many. Okay. Because, like, you really know a lot of, like, repertoire, like contemporary songs and classic songs. I think I got to know you from the Geylang Serai stream, I think.
That's where I started to fell in love with live streaming. The first it started was with Shidi and Adi, which I'm also very
Correct. They're veterans and they're very experienced entertainers. Yes. It's always a lot of fun to watch them. Yeah.
And I think one day you were on the live, because after that I have more time, okay. Then they did it like they didn't stop doing the live session until somewhere halfway they stopped for a while, and they returned back for Geylang Serai. And that's when more singing come, please.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So now, I mean, it's great that Geylang Serai, I think they were definitely among the first, if not the first, to really do so much live programming. And, you know, I think they had a lot of foresight, you know, to say that, okay, this is really going to be how we can engage our community and our residents during the lockdown. And I think it's really, they really blazed a trail for other CCs and all that. For now, you can see a lot of CCs also doing something similar. So,
but Geylang Serai is the original first I started watching, before I knew so many new music, like jazz, classical, many more. It's all started because of live stream. Yeah. Like,
that's right.
Yep. And
I was even saying that, you know, maybe even compared to before coronavirus, right? I think a lot of us were out there performing, but not necessarily streaming because there was no need. But, you know, that meant unless I went to someone's, like, gig location, I wouldn't actually get to see them ever perform. So what was interesting for me is that when Circuit Breaker came around, that was the first time, like, because so many of my musician friends started streaming, then I would be like, hey, this is actually the first time I get to hear you perform. You know, because I was never able to go to your gig location before this, either because it's very far or clashes with my other gigs. So maybe I never even heard them live before. But now, ironically, during Circuit Breaker, at a time when we're all stuck at home and can't go out, this is my first time hearing some of my friends, like, sing and perform.
Not only like gigs, like you said, you perform, but now it's everybody in the world, okay? No matter, because it's social media, they can just see, they can just view from other side of the world, not like doing gigs. You only have the specific people there, like maybe maximum, I don't know how many people, but maybe
Definitely not, you're not physically constrained anymore. You know, your audience can be global. I mean, I'm not saying that it will be, because it really depends a lot on Facebook algorithm, your following, a lot of stuff. But potentially, you know, yes, you can engage like global audiences if you have the right marketing strategy and the right reach and the right following. You know, that's definitely the potential. Yeah.
And like reaching out to the audience is something. Many live streamers or singers nowadays get to talk to their audiences, but normally live gigs you have that specific timing to perform, right? They don't have that many people to chat with, and live streaming make it easier for all musicians to do it.
Well, I mean, there's pros and cons. You know, on the one hand, it still is, at the start, it still takes getting used to that you're not singing to actual people. It's just you singing into a camera, and you really don't know who's out there watching you. All you have is like, you know, X number of views, and maybe people will comment, but if no one comments, you're like, hey, is anyone here listening to me? At least when you're in a live gig location, you can see, okay, there's like five tables of people and they're actually there. You know, but you know, on the other hand, you're right. People can just like, you know, on a live stream, they can type in comments whenever they want. They can put, they can put hearts, exactly like you. Like, you're very actively involved in the chats, which is great for us. Otherwise, we also don't know who we're singing to. So that is definitely one advantage of live streaming over gigging in a physical location. But you know, any first time live streamer will tell you that, wow, it takes getting used to sing to no audience, because you cannot see their faces. Like, you know, you don't know whether they're bored with the song or why they really like the song. Because, you know, you can read people's body language. Like, if they are eating and suddenly they stop and they really like sit and listen to you, then you know, oh, they really like this song. But you can't see that, you know, when you're live streaming. You will only know if, say, the person go and comment, wow, I really like this song. You know, so if they don't comment, you cannot read that from them. You can't read the vibe. So it's kind of a different way of communicating that you have to adjust to when you're doing live streaming. And for some people, they adapt well. And I think some people just really don't like the fact that there's no actual warm bodies around us. So some people take to it better than others. And you still have to learn how to engage a crowd in live streaming differently from how you would engage them in a live setting. So, you know, I don't necessarily think it's all better on a live stream. I would just say that these differences that are interesting, and depending on your preference, you might find it good or bad lah, if you like live streaming or you don't lah. So
basically, I started live streaming. Basically, me also, I started live streaming. I'm not very good at it, but it's practice and practice, and the comments, like, basically, I feel like I'm talking to no one, as you said. It's like the first few times I live stream, I was still like, okay, you know what? I'm going to give up. I'm not going to sing anymore. Because no views. But after that, I learned how to improve it and market it out. It's like share it out to many groups. And now my views are okay. Not as good as you.
No lah, it's okay only also lah. But I mean, I would agree with what you said in that it takes time. Like, you can't expect live stream to be a one and done. Like, I do it once and then, you know, boom, wow, I have a following and I know what I'm doing.
No, that is Mr. Slow and Daniel.
Yeah, because they had, I would say they definitely had a following that they really drew upon and grew further when they started live streaming. So, you know, I think that is a continuous work that they've been doing since long before the pandemic already. So they took what they had in terms of audience and following, and were able to make sure they continue to engage that audience and even draw in new audiences while live streaming. So I don't think every musician's situation is going to be the same, but you know, I would say that.
Hey fellow podcast listeners, this is Daryl dropping in, and I want to thank you all for being so supportive on my podcast. We hit 100 views just in 4 months, and many more to come.
My learning point has been, if you want to stream, you have to be clear why you're doing it, and you somehow have to learn to not be affected by things like low view counts, you know, bad comments. Yeah, you know, you have to. And I think in an online environment, maybe you can feel bad from seeing those things quite easily, you know, because already as it is, Facebook and social media is really designed to, you know, foster, some people would say, addiction, and some people would say it fosters like low self-esteem in people because you keep comparing. So, you know, in some ways, those kinds of feelings can be amplified if you're doing live streaming. So if you do decide that you want to do live streaming, you've got to be clear what's in it for you to make it worth your while to continue. Like, you know, do you just want to make sure you don't, your vocal cords don't get rusty? Do you want to make sure that you have something to market yourself with? You know, on and on. So you just need to be clear in your mind what's in it for you to live stream, so that you don't get affected if you see you only have like 5 people watching you, or like nobody commenting, or like nobody leaves you a tip. Otherwise, you'll end every live stream feeling, sorry to use the language, but you feel like shit lah after every live
it's
stream.
It's okay lah. It's okay lah. Yeah. This is not any
like child friendly. Like, yeah. I mean, you can feel that way, you know, yes, if you are not clear why you're doing it. So I would say that's my learning point as well, you know, from this live stream experience so far.
Actually, circuit breaker lah. It's actually okay from my side. It has been very good because normal days I don't get to connect, I don't get to even talk to people, and
right,
I don't know why COVID-19 and circuit breaker has made me more socially, like, imagine I wouldn't be talking to you now, I wouldn't be messaging you now even if I didn't know
you.
That's how that's how amazing things can be. Like,
yes,
I wouldn't be talking to you now if I don't tell myself to send you a DM, because every time I'm scared last time, but now I feel it's normal, because nice. It's not everybody, yeah, not everybody have this not luck lah, have this own sense to message people, because a lot of people nowadays are very they don't like to talk, or they're very shy.
Right.
So I took the chance.
No, I was going to say that it's true. I mean, the world has become so much smaller, and I completely agree that if not for Circuit Breaker, you know, I would definitely know less people than I do now. And it's because of live streaming, it's because of, you know, I can't talk about Circuit Breaker without talking about Channing Taipei, which was like a big part of my Circuit Breaker experience. And it really, you know, helped me to make so many more friends. And I totally did not, I don't think you expected to make friends during Circuit Breaker, and, you know, neither did I. And not just friends in Singapore, but, you know, Channing Taipei, you've got so many people from Malaysia, from Taiwan, even from the United States. So it was just, you know, really nice to expand your social network even from home. And I think maybe because people have less things going on,
it's,
you know,
human
maybe
that connection.
Makes them,
human
yeah,
connection.
More willing to connect with people. And, you know, make time for people, ironically. So, you know, what you've said, absolutely, I do agree with, you know, what your thoughts are as well, because that was also similar to my experience. Yeah.
The first ever person the artist that I really wanted to talk to was Mrs. Low. So, okay, I was scared at first to even send her a DM. So I took a lot of time, so I just sent her and she replied me, and the mall is like, I have this chance, so let's try it. And she really replied me because I didn't know.
Wow.
I became her fan and supporter and her winner and her winner also for her karaoke competition.
Wow. Yeah, I think, you know, definitely Miss Lu is someone who's very inspiring. Like, even before I spoke to her, like, online, connected with her online for the first time, I, you know, heard a lot about her. I heard her music, and I thought it was really fantastic that she had built, you know, such a clear brand, and, you know, she had such a fantastic voice and vision for what her artistry was going to be like. And, you know, and she is quite young as well, and it's just impressive and inspiring to see someone so young who's so clear about what they want to be and, you know, what steps they need to get there, and also be just humble enough to keep learning and growing all the way. So, you know, I think it's wonderful that we have people like her in the industry as well, you know, in our Singapore scene. I think we can be very proud of Miss Lu and, you know, and Daniel and, you know.
And many more.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
Yes, and many more.
And there's a lot of hidden talents that many people do not know about.
Mm.
That's why we have to support. Right. That's why it's called supporting local musicians and many more. We have to support because that is what we have. We can't take everything for granted. Maybe one day, really, the industry falls down. Who knows?
But I mean, I don't think the industry. Yeah, but I mean, that being said. I don't ever think that, you know, the industry will ever really be dead. I think it just means that you've got to continue to innovate. Yeah, or, you know, live stream, or maybe there's something new out there that people don't know about yet. I mean, there's all sorts of business models to be explored, you know, and I think, yeah, we don't really have a choice but to try new things at the moment. And maybe that's not a bad thing, because maybe it's time we did, you know, these things. Like, live streaming has been around for a long time, but not many people, I guess, saw the need to go into it until this whole thing happened. So now when we get out there and we start playing music again, we have even more tools and even more knowledge at our disposal than we did before. So then the question will be, how do we take what we learned during this period and apply it to our post-COVID life? And I think it'll be very exciting because, you know, you'll see live performance maybe being combined with live stream, with other kind of, you know, collaborative technologies, with new kinds of business models. You know, so I think that could be really exciting, like this kind of hybrid future for music making. And I think that's really what crisis forces you to do, you know, which is think of new ways of doing things.
I have a thought, like, you know, like, okay, this is out from music, like, retails, like, shopping centers. Imagine if sorry, everything goes bad, then the technology in the future, maybe there's no more shopping. There's a shopping center, but it's all gonna be electronic. No person standing inside. It's all. No shopkeepers, all are robots and all machines.
Yeah. Yeah. Automation is happening even in like hotels. Like there's things like robot butlers that are being used in some hotels in Singapore as well. I saw a video about the Dubai airport, and you know, they do videos about all the safety measures that are now in place. And I thought some really cool things I saw was, you know, lifts that you don't need to press the buttons. You just kind of use the back of your hand and you float it over the button, so you don't have to actually make any contact with the lift button and the lift will open for you. So I think there's going to be more and more of these technologies to facilitate like contactless access, contactless payment, contactless customer service, automation to, you know, support all of that. So yeah, you know, all these kinds of technologies would only come up as a result of what's happening at the moment, which is in its own way kind of exciting too, because some of these things may stick around even after the pandemic is over, and it will make a lot of sense because it's just generally good, you know, to make sure that we reduce contact with too many things that have unknown germs on them. Automation, I mean, some people will say it takes away jobs, but at the same time, you know, for a country that has, you know, challenges with its labor force, like Singapore, where we have a shortage of labor for certain kinds of jobs, you know, maybe automation like e-butler or whatever, you know, those are good ways to help us meet some of these big challenges that are going to be around even long after COVID is over. So I guess it's a bit of a tangent, but those are just my thoughts. I mean, I'm not an expert, but, you know, COVID time gives you a lot of time to think. So maybe I've been thinking a lot.
About your voice acting, about you doing voice over. Imagine if you were the robot. Maybe they hire to be
a robot voice. Yeah. Hello. That would be. I am here to do your room service. Please press 1 to receive your room service.
you just did a voiceover for the Navy thing, right?
Yeah, so I've been doing... I just did a voiceover for a recent campaign to promote women joining the Navy. So that our Singapore Navy is doing a recruitment drive of women. And, you know, I got an opportunity to do a voiceover for a couple of the campaign ads. So one of them is out already, and that's
By the way, which one was you? I still can't figure out.
Oh, really? Okay, I was the middle voice. The one that said, it doesn't get tougher than the Navy, but the Navy has never met me. So that was my voice. That was the middle voice. But people can also see the ad. It is on the Navy's Instagram page. Yes. And it's also on my Facebook. I kind of posted it. So it's that was really nice to have an opportunity to do something for what I feel is, you know, a meaningful cause to promote careers for women in even in you know, the Navy. So that's the first ad. The second one, I don't know when that's going to be coming out, but definitely I'll be posting it if it does go online. So that's the second
stay ad tuned.
Not been ad yet. Yeah, stay tuned. I'm quite excited to see how it's going to look as well. That was really fun.
How about your voiceover? So, yeah. What is how long have you been doing voiceover?
Right. I started I actually first did a 2-day course with the Singapore Media Academy. Even back when I was in my previous job, you know, we have some budget to do courses and, you know, for personal interest. So I just decided I signed up for a 2-day workshop to learn the basics of voiceover. But, you know, I didn't think that I'd do anything with it in time. I just went and learned. I recorded a demo reel. But when I quit my job, which was, you know, less than a year later after
that
course.
What was the job?
It's a bit difficult to describe because I kind of did a bit of everything. But basically, I was when I left, I was doing HR for one of the government agencies. So I was helping to recruit and hire people to join the organization. So that was the job that I left. And it was, yeah, so only after that. Started really trying to pitch for voiceover jobs, sending out my reel, got rejected a lot of times. You know, sometimes I would audition and didn't get anything. So it was a really slow journey to get like my first voiceover gig. And then you just have to make sure that every opportunity you have, you put your reel together, you keep sending it out to people. So I've done some voiceover work for the Ministry of Education. So you won't really hear those, what I did out there. You know, it's only students in school who will be hearing my voice, tell them about like science.
I am a student,
But my materials are all for secondary school kids lah.
I am
primary and secondary school. Ah, okay. Yeah, I... I have done some materials for science, but I don't know whether you would have used them lah. Science and what else have I done? Science and social studies for express and normal tech streams, I think.
I am normal tech stream.
Normal tech. Okay, maybe you heard my voice lah.
I can't remember.
I did some social studies and I did some what do you call that? Some science as well. So maybe you've heard me like tell you about biology or something. But aside from that, I mean, you may have heard my voice on there was a breast cancer ad campaign a couple of years ago called Every Woman Matters. So that actually was one of my first big breaks for doing voiceover work. So I'm very grateful to my friends who recommended me to try for this job. I've also
Decathlon
done
also, right?
So if you call Decathlon in Singapore, that's my voice like telling you the opening hours and where
now?
To go. Yeah. So I would say, like if you literally call them now, that would be my voice that you hear. So that was really fun as well. And then I would say, the Navy was probably another big one. So aside from that, I've done like a few campaigns for quite a lot of like non-profits and government-linked organizations. I think they seem to have categorized my voice as like the warm, motherly, concerned voice. So I get a lot of those kind of roles, which, I'm really happy with. I'm quite happy to have a certain impression in people's minds when they hear my voice, because it makes it easier for them to like say, oh, you'd be a good fit for this job or that job. So that's just some examples of the voiceover work I've been doing.
Mainly we've been talking about your careers, your singing, your voiceover talents. And one last thing I want to ask is,
sure.
If you were not doing all this thing, what will you be today? Mm.
Wow.
Okay,
that's a tough question because I am doing exactly what I thought I would do when I quit my job, because this was my plan, and I just feel very thankful that I've been able to live out what I planned on doing. I can't really think of what else I would be doing now if I weren't doing what I'm doing now. I guess I would have stayed on, maybe I would have stayed on in my corporate job. I mean, I enjoyed what I was doing there, but I just decided I needed a chance to explore all these things I had in mind. And I knew that if I didn't do it then, I might get so comfortable that I'd never go out and do it. And then maybe I didn't want to regret not having tried it. I'm actually really happy that I'm doing what I'm doing now, and with where I am now, I just feel really content and satisfied.
You have a quote in mind that you live by that you want to share with these audiences out there, whoever it is.
Wow, this is the hardest question you asked me, man. Do I have a quote that I live by?
Or you want to say anything?
Sure. There's one quote that I like. I mean, of course, when I'm done with this interview, I might be like walking around and be like, hey, basket, there was a better quote. But the one that I come back to a lot is, have courage and be kind. It's a quote. I mean, those of you who know your movies, actually, do you know where that quote comes from? Have courage and be kind.
I do not know.
Yeah, so
I'm not a movie type.
You're not a movie type. You're a music man.
Maybe.
Have courage and be kind is actually from the movie Cinderella, like the live action movie. You know, the not the animated one, but Disney did a live action version. And that is basically Cinderella. That was Cinderella's mantra. Her mother told her, have courage and be kind. And I just liked it because I think those, you know, those words are very meaningful, especially for me and for what I've been through. And it's just reminded me that to you know, try and show and have more empathy and compassion for others as well. You know, so that's where the kindness part comes in. And I think, you know, aside from like inspiring people to go and live out your dreams or whatever, I think fundamentally, this is where it starts. You know, it's no point if in terms of character you're lacking, in terms of personal growth and development you're lacking. I think character and I think growth should come first. And that's why I think have courage and be kind means a lot to me.
Is there any take back for you later? You can tell after this, I'll continue talking.
Yeah, if I think about something else, suddenly I'll be like, oh, there's something else. But I think probably that's the one thing that comes to mind. So if I go with my gut, that's the one quote that I would go with, you know. And yeah, that means a lot to me. So maybe that's something interesting for and meaningful for you, for your listeners as well.
For all the young people out there, or not old lah, what will you tell them? Anything, okay?
Okay, what would I say? I know we make a lot of plans for the future. And especially when you're young, I think, you know, the future looks full of possibilities and you may have your sights set on something. But don't ever... I mean, I feel that the world is so unpredictable that we need to be adaptable. We cannot be crushed when our first set of dreams don't come true for us, because a lot of that is not under our control. But what we have control over is how can you be nimble? How can you be resilient? How can you be creative? To go in a new direction and be, I think, okay with it, you know, okay with uncertainty, okay with not necessarily knowing what's next, but just, you know, being flexible, being humble, being willing to change and to do things differently. I think for young people, right now, I mean, it's very clear the next 1 to 2 years at least will be a period of a lot of uncertainty. And I really feel for young people who are just stepping out of school right now and you're stepping into a job market where you can't get a steady job, you know, and you have to look at options you might have never considered, like
media.
Sorry?
Like doing media?
I mean, any job. I mean, we look at what people are predicting. There's going to be we're going to be in a recessionary mode, if not worse, the next couple of years. And, you know, we may even need to take jobs that we never thought we'd be doing. But, you know, it's not forever. And this too shall pass. But we just cannot be so rigid and inflexible and hang on so tightly to what we want to believe in, you know? I feel we need to adapt and to grow. Other people may feel differently about this. And, you know, I think that's fantastic if you really are resilient and believe so firmly in one dream that, you know, don't care, you will just aim for that. But from my experiences, I think the advice I would give is be flexible and be willing to grow and be open to change and try to be positive about change. So
thank you, Vivian, for being here today. Such a pleasure having you. So remember to follow her on Instagram and Facebook at Instagram is Vivian Sing Along. Vivian Wong Sing Along.
That's right.
And
so
Facebook.
VIVIENNE. So a lot of people spell my name wrong, which I'm very used to. So on Instagram I am Vivian Wong Sing Along, VIVIENNE. So Vivian Wong Sing Along. And on Facebook you can find me at Vivian Wong Music. And I mean, if I can just do a quick plug, every Tuesday I do a live stream with my music partner Caleb. And Tuesdays at 9 p.m., you can tune in to our Facebook. And catch us stream a couple of hours of live music. So come and say hi and give us your requests and just generally say hello so that we don't feel like we're talking to nobody, which does happen sometimes.
And me torturing Vivian to sing songs that are killing her.
Yeah, so okay. You can try and request, but you know, yes, we will try and do your request as much as we can. Daryl always wants me to sing When We Were Young, which is a fantastic song, but oh my god, Daryl, you kill me every time.
Okay, we have
but the next round I will sing that for you.
Okay.
We have come to the end of today's episode of Time Out with Daryl with Vivian, as she shares many stories about her career. And if you would like to find out more, please head over to her socials. And thank you for being a part of my journey of today's episode, as I bring you local musicians on my episode. With that, I'm going to close off by saying thank you for listening to this episode and hoping to see you all back next episode, where I have Yuena will be sharing with us her story too. So signing off, this is Time Out with Daryl Podcast.
Time out with Daryl Sells.